Ladies and gentlemen, sit it right up. Let's go see the elephant. When I'm a road.
Welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the city, rain and storms. Be careful if you're out there on the roads or heading out on the roads because there are showers about. But we are here. We are live. We are the American Adversaries. It is drive time, prime time, as we come to you live on FM 105.5 and AM 660, The Answer. I am Christopher Hart, and back in actually the host chair tonight is the chairman of the board, Mike McBath.
Chris, I got
fresh off a charity golf tournament.
That's right. We played the Reggie Brands for Seminole High School. Yeah. I think they had a very nice, successful tournament yesterday. It was at Black Bear.
Where is Black Bear?
Black Bear is actually in Sorrento. Which is a little bit outside of Popka,
yeah.
But it's a real rolling hills, yeah. Different type of atmosphere for golf,
yeah.
You know, relative to the flatness you normally see. But I think the great thing is to see parents of high school athletes contributing because all the money went towards Seminole, you know, that they've
high
had
school.
A tough time and went toward Seminole high school sports. And so it was great to see the turnout they had and, you know, Reggie did a nice job, and the whole thing went very well. And this is the second annual one, and each one will get better and better.
All right.
And as you know, Chris, golf tournaments have really proven a good way for groups to raise money, you know, as long as they start them 3 months in advance. You know, I've been in so many golf tournaments, I can tell you what's right or wrong with your tournament real quick when you tell me.
A lot of groups, they start planning a year out for the next year.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I hate getting involved when somebody calls me up and say, well, our tournament's in 3 weeks and we're just getting started today. Forget it. Cancel it.
Yep.
I agree.
All right. Well, I'm glad it was a success for good old Reg.
Reg.
Who shot better golf yesterday, you or Reggie?
I would say we were on about a par. You know, he's like me.
So neither one of you were any good.
No, I mean, let's put it this way. We're not bad. We're just not good, you know.
Okay. So. All right. I'd have better luck throwing the ball than trying to.
Yeah.
Anyway, Nick Lo Cicero is back on the bridge tonight. 407-774-8255 is the number. And a little bit later on in the show, we got a new Mike's come up with another one, contest, and we'll roll out the rules for Thursday's contest. And it's another one I think you're going to like a lot. We have a guest who's going to join us at the bottom of this hour. Have you ever seen the movie or read the book Catch 22? Well, no, we're not going to have the author of Catch 22 on the show, but we are going to have Thomas Cleaver, who has written a book called The Bridge Busters, the true story of the Catch 22 bomb wing, the 57th bomb wing. So that ought to be interesting. And, of course, you know, Memorial Day is coming up here a week from Monday. And just a real quick program note, we will be taking Memorial Day off. But we will also be doing a special Memorial Day edition of the Sunday night 3-hour tour prior to Memorial Day, that Sunday night before. But that'll be later on in this hour of the show. In the meantime, we got a lot to talk about. Let's get right down to business. Kentucky and Oregon are getting down to business today. As we wind down the primary season, it's less than a month away now. The 3 more weeks and the primary season is officially over.
Thank God, Chris. It's getting boring just about other than this Sanders-Clinton deal.
See,
but it's, I'm getting bored.
You see, Trump said you would get bored with him winning so much.
I know. I'm getting bored.
The Republicans are running only in Oregon tonight. I believe they already did their Kentucky primary.
Yeah, I think they did.
And Trump won. Oregon tonight for both parties, Republicans and Democrats. Kentucky for just the Democrats. And Hillary's running for her life in Kentucky. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a little while. The presumption is that Sanders is going to win Oregon. And he kind of more or less needs to keep on this roll and keep the pressure on Hillary Clinton. But we'll see what those numbers turn out like. Of course, we'll examine that tomorrow.
The other thing, Chris, I think tonight that Hillary is going to hit the brick ceiling. And the reason I say that is even if she wins Kentucky, this is not going to be any overwhelming win.
No.
I predict it's going to be like 52-48, either one. You
a
know, it could go one way or the other, but it's still going to be a loss if she comes in, you know, real close.
And in a way, the damage has already been done, whether she wins or loses, because she's been tied down there
in
a state where she shouldn't have to be spending any time.
And where she won by a vast majority before. So
8 years ago.
Exactly. Yeah, I love it. I mean, let's deplete those coffers of money.
Yep.
And she's doing a good job at it.
And if that wasn't enough to spoil her day, she got some bad poll numbers that came out today. Yeah, for her, these are national poll numbers. They still show her in the lead, but they show the race now tightening and pretty much neck and neck as the Reuters poll showed us last week. And the Reuters poll, by the way, has been indicating this race much closer than the other polls since last fall.
If you were a Democrat, though, now remember how Bernie was going against her 6-7 months ago, right? It just kept changing and changing and changing.
In his favor.
Well, guess what? This is going to be an exact duplicate of this before it's over.
Indeed it is. As a matter of fact, now that you say that, I think that and Nostradamus is the better prognosticator here, but I'm going to go out a bit out on the limb. I think that the general election is going to be a reflection, if you will, of the Republican primary in the sense that for a while, it's going to look like a horse race. It's really going to look like we got something, a competition going on. But before too long, it's going to start to become quite obvious
who the winner's
going to be. Hillary Clinton's going down and going down
big.
Hard.
Right, really.
Like
big.
The 16,
mm-hmm.
She's going to be number 17.
I think the other thing, Chris, think about this, and we've talked about this before, though. I talk about the outside influence, which is not being discussed. You know, let's say, again, there's another bombing in America, right?
Yeah.
How about there's
or in Europe.
You know, another scandal. Or anything that goes on out there will only benefit Trump. There's nothing in the world scene that can benefit Hillary. Zero, other than maybe 2 million gays come in from Russia, right? That might help her. But that would be about it. In all seriousness, she could get waxed big time, unfortunately, from some of these outside occurrences that could take place, even like, you know, China blows one of our ships out of the water because Obama's not going to do anything.
Or take some hostages like Iran did.
Oh, is that disgusting the deeper we get into that?
Yeah, and by the way, evidently our sailors weren't treated as well as we were led to believe.
Surprise, surprise, right, Chris?
But once again, just like the Republican primary, history during the primary has been on Trump's side. And I think that that will only continue. And things that Obama does, like the bathroom thing, right?
Keep doing it.
All right. So let me go through some of these poll numbers. NBC Survey Monkey Weekly poll shows Clinton 48, Trump 45. That's within the margin of error. And Trump has gained 2 points in 1 week. By the way, when it comes to independence, it is 44-36 Trump.
That's a devastating number.
How about them there numbers,
yeah, I love
right?
That.
All right. And when it comes to women, Hillary Clinton still is ahead by 15 points, but last week she was ahead by 19 points.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to the approval rating, it's pretty much the same. She's got a 40% approval rating. He's got a 37% approval rating. And his approval rating is going up.
Right.
That was the NBC Survey Monkey. Now, our friends here in town with the Gravis poll, they have their national poll out.
Right.
48-46, Clinton-Trump. Right? And once again, he has closed the gap. Perhaps the most interesting numbers come out of the McLaughlin poll. The McLaughlin brothers put this poll out. It's a national poll. It shows 46-42 Clinton over Trump. But once again, he has moved up in this and closed the gap. In Georgia, he is up by 4 points. Now, that 46-42 is a national number.
Right.
When it comes to favorability, Trump has gained 9 points in his favorability rating. Clinton has gained 2. So he has definitely closed the gap too. And get this, and this is a national McLaughlin poll. Trump is polling 13% of the black vote.
Right.
That's right around, that's up there where George W. got.
Right.
All right. Romney only got, I think it was 9%, right? That's a significant move.
That means
he's getting about 40% more in terms of what Romney got. All right. And that's before you get a bunch of black entertainers and sports people come out endorsing
him.
And I guarantee you, it's going to happen. All right. Hispanics. You want to take a guess as to his support amongst the Hispanics?
25%.
27, not bad.
I told you.
Not bad. 27%, which is about average.
Mm-hmm.
That's about what Romney got.
Right.
So all this falderall that the Hispanics were going to run away and give the election to the other side is just not shaping up. And now this, and one more for you here, amongst Catholics, nationwide, 47-42 Trump.
Yeah, I also think you're going to see a bigger push by the religious sector for Trump because of the meaning of the, you know, of our court system is so much at risk if he's not elected, whether you like Trump or not. You know, our courts can destroy the effectiveness of all our churches.
Yeah,
and I think they know it's on the line, and I think you're going to see, and I think it's a little early yet before they push, but I do believe they're going to push real hard in September, October.
Well, if they know what's good for them, they will.
They know what's good for them. That's the right answer.
You know, there are these bozos about who are, pushing this notion that, oh, we can survive 4 or 8 years of a Hillary Clinton presidency because, you know, she's a typical politician. It'll be the same old, but we'll survive somehow.
You think our national debt will survive Chris?
Will we really survive when she puts 2 or 3 or 4 justices on the Supreme Court? How the heck are we going to survive that, you geniuses out there, right? You're talking about throwing all these principled constitutionalists who just can't bring themselves to vote for Donald Trump are willing to put the keys to the Supreme Court in Hillary Clinton's hands. What do you think she's going to do with your Constitution there, constitutionalists? She's going to use it for toilet paper or worse. Uh-huh. All right. When we come back, we'll be talking about Ms. Clanton.
Well, you sound so excited about Hillary. Do you have a crush on her, Chris?
Crooked Hillary. Can't get enough of that. All right. We'll be right back with more of the American Adversaries Drive Time Prime Time Show.
Answer.
Who let the dogs out?
Will somebody please put Hillary back in her cage?
Wouldn't that be great if...
Change the newspaper in there first.
I know, if Fox did this and then put her face up on the screen. I mean, I wonder if they would do that.
That's her voice.
I know, that is her, that's her barking,
yes.
And we've just brought everything together as the total package.
That's right, total package. That's what we're trying to give you here on the American Adversaries. All right, 407-774-8255 is the number. And Hillary is, let me back up a second. Yesterday, I was telling you that, in my opinion, the bigwigs, the editors at the New York Times, spent most of yesterday up in their boardroom, you know, talking about how they were going to deal with the fact that this woman that they made this big story centered around came
out. She turns on them, I know, it was great.
She did the whole thing, and I said, they're up there, you know, mad at her. For not getting,
for telling the truth.
Well, and not getting that what they see as sexist behavior, she didn't.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And so today, they sent out a couple of the reporters who wrote the story, and that's in essence the argument they made, that the way they saw it, they portrayed things accurately.
You saw
and
that.
And I'm sure in their pea little size brains, that is accurate.
You saw that Trump's reporter has contacted them and wants the story recanted.
Well, he should demand it.
And I'd say we'll see you in court.
I'd sue him.
And you notice that all these horrible things.
But unfortunately, he's a public figure.
Oh, I know. But you notice all the horrible things I've said about Hillary in these books and everything. She literally could sue, except for one thing.
They're true.
Right. There's one problem she has.
But let me ask this, and I meant to say it last night, but I forgot. Is this any different, what they did with this article against Trump called Crossing the Line, is that any different than what the National Enquirer did to Ted Cruz? Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Couple of stories
they planted the story.
There was nothing there.
Right.
There was nothing there. And in this case, it's worse than there being nothing there, because this woman yesterday characterized Trump with these adjectives. And how many NFL players would these words apply to, Mike?
What do you mean? What are you looking at me for?
She said that he was kind.
Oh, that's nice.
Thoughtful.
Oh, thank you.
Gracious. And a true gentleman, and generous, right. by the right. way. And so now today, the fourth, right. there's four of them now who have come out and refuted what the New York Times
said. Do you know how embarrassing that is? I mean, to a major
If you had any shame.
Yeah, I mean, if you had any shame, that's the right point.
And once again, we have to understand that the way they're seeing this, the way they're talking about it in the boardroom at the New York Times up yonder in New York in the tower, wherever it's at, is these stupid women don't understand that they've been abused. You see, that's the way they see it. They don't understand that women can choose the way they, the lifestyle they want to live. They can't figure that part out, you see. To them, this was rude, crude, and lewd. And it doesn't matter if she saw it as being kind, generous, and all that stuff, right? In their mind, she's an idiot. Because all of us are idiots who don't think see things their way. So long comes Hillary, right? And Trump is warning, look out, because I'm going to lay down the law. And you are going to have to answer to it.
I mean,
and you and Billy are going to get.
I mean, I can't believe that she walks into this element of women, because, and we discussed this earlier, is when I look at this women's situation on verbal abuse, when these women are reporters or they're in politics, you know, that's not like you're really addressing a woman for being the woman. You're addressing them in a competitive fashion. So if I have a way to upset you by maybe going to a different colored word, maybe I'll do that, because that I know can throw you off your game. Does that really mean I feel that way about you or the gender? No, not at all. They have not competed against a true competitor, and Hillary is going to get bashed into oblivion before this is over. She better hope that she gets indicted soon.
Here's what I believe her strategy is, and it's flawed, and I'll tell you why. She thinks that her lackeys at the New York Times will do her dirty work for her and go after Trump on, you know, whatever it is. Right now it happens to be the women thing, right? Later on it's going to be something else, I guarantee you. But right now it's the women thing. And they think that he's going to respond in like kind against them. And they're right about that. Mm-hmm. Only he's going to respond not in like kind, but he's going to, you know, he's going to turn the battleship broadside and let loose with all the guns.
Trumpedo her.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking about Jeffrey Epstein. That is a name everybody in the country is going to know who Jeffrey Epstein is and what Billy Clinton did with Mr. Epstein and little girls. Okay. Now to get back to my point, though, she thinks that once Trump starts going after her about all this stuff, that the public is going to see her as the poor little victim again. All she did was stand by her man, and now that mean old nasty Moby Dick Donald Trump is beating up on her and spitting seawater on her and slapping her around with his big old tail. Oh, ain't it awful? Here's the problem, though. She, like you just said, she has never been attacked in the way she's getting ready to be attacked, because he's going to go after Bill to get at Hillary, and that show that she is complicit and a co-conspirator, if you will, in his criminal activity in assaulting and raping women.
Right.
All right. And perhaps exhibiting trends of pedophilia and drug use and a few other things like that. But drug use may not come out. It might not be necessary. Here's the problem for Hillary. She's not going to be seen as the victim. This is a different world. And she has been bitten a couple of times by political correctness. And I've pointed it out on the show where she's kind of complained about how political correctness has actually been applied to her. It's going to happen again, and here's how. All this stuff about rapes on college campuses and all this stuff going on out there, all right, they ain't seen nothing like the horned dog that Bill Clinton is getting ready to be revealed as. Who do you think these young women on the college campuses are? You think they're going to look right at Hillary Clinton knowing that she knew he was doing this
and
facilitated
it?
Not allowed it, yeah. Facilitated it.
Yeah.
Played an active role in covering it up, knowing that it would occur again and again and again.
Now, this Epstein story is enough to turn an election if he were constantly focused on this and constantly educated these people. And when you talk to college audiences, it would turn their stomach.
It is going to turn an election.
It is going to turn
and
the
it
election.
It is going to happen this summer.
Mm-hmm.
And you watch. This election is going to be over before Election Day, just like the Republican primary.
The summer of disconnect.
Moby Dick is going to swim on. We'll be right back with the American Adversaries Drive Time Primetime Show.
From the dressing room to restretch their tights, here are the champions of political professional wrestling, the American Adversaries.
Okay, welcome back to the show, folks. Thank you so very much for being with us tonight. Just real quick, a quick note that you are listening to the American Adversaries, of course, on FM 105.5 and AM 660, The Answer. A number of you called in for Shriners tickets. They have all been put in the mail. They were all put in the mail Saturday. So if you didn't get them today and you don't get them tomorrow, call us and let us know, because we'll have to make other arrangements where perhaps you can pick up some substitute tickets here at the station or something, because they all have been put in the mail. So if you didn't get them, there's been a problem somehow. Maybe we got the address wrong or something. Hopefully each and every one of you who requested tickets got them.
Chris, I hope our mail delivery is a little bit more effective than the TSA, right? If it isn't, they'll be getting their tickets in early September.
It is ridiculous.
I mean, did you see the stories out there?
Chicago O'Hare, they had to provide people with cots so they could sleep essentially on the floor because they had to miss their flight because they had to wait so long to go through the TSA lines.
In L.A., now they want you there 3 hours early.
3 hours.
You might as well drive. You figure, you know, you get there, you wait another two, that's 5 hours. I don't know.
Yeah.
Not a good deal.
Not a good deal at all. All right, but we got a good deal for you right now, because we have an author to be on our show today. He's actually more than just an author, regular old author, not that that is bad, but he's also an aviation historian, and he's discovered some prior unknown war stories and photographs, presumably from World War II. He's written a book called The Bridge Busters, The True Story of the Catch-22 Bomb Wing. And I know most of you out there have probably seen the movie Catch-22 or maybe have read the book or both. But let me bring on the line with us right now, Thomas Cleaver. Thomas Cleaver, thank you for being with the American Adversaries this afternoon.
Well, thank you.
Well, we appreciate it. First of all, how is it that you ended up writing a book about the book Catch-22?
Back in 2013, I was reading the Huffington Post on Veterans Day, and I saw an article by a lady about her father, who was a World War II veteran who had never talked about what he'd done, and she'd tried all her life to get him to talk. She found a piece of paper with his old unit on it, and she did some research and found out they were having a convention in a few weeks, and she got her dad to go with her, and as she said, now he can't shut up. Now, for the last 20 years, I've been writing for Flight Journal magazine, where we look for those stories that haven't been told before. So I checked her out through Google and got in touch with her and told her who I was and what I wanted to do. And she put me in touch with her father, Paul Young, and he told me about flying 45 missions in the campaign against the bridges in the Brenner Pass, and I wrote an article about it. Fight Journal readers really liked it. And then my agent, Jim Hornfisher, was asking me what I had to do for another book, and I went through my list and came up with, well, there is the story about the group that Joe Heller flew with. And he said, that's the one. And that's how it happened. But it's the last great unknown flying story of World War II. These guys actually won the war in Italy by wiping out the German supply lines at the end of the war. And in October of 1944, the Germans were getting 600% of what they needed. These guys flew these missions for 6 months, and at the end of March, the Germans reported they were getting 45% of what they needed, and the rail line was closed half the month. 9 days later, the Allied Army started its spring offensive in the Alps, and 20 days later, the Germans surrendered a week and a half ahead of all the rest of the surrenders.
Let me ask you something. Now, Heller is the author of Catch 22.
Yes, yes.
Was Yossarian in the book and in the movie, was that Heller? Is that who Heller? He was the bombardier and flew in the nose of the plane.
It's very interesting. There was a guy who was Armenian who came to the unit same time Heller did, had a name very close to Yossarian, and so Heller modified the guy's name and used it, but the Yossarian character is Heller.
Thomas, were you an aviator yourself, or were you in the war yourself?
I did some aircrew flying, but I have a few hundred hours flying in civilian life back when people could afford to do that.
Yeah, not anymore, Thomas.
Now, that's a fact.
Was the movie fairly accurate in the sense that the missions were being flown out of, I believe, Libya, and they would?
And they were actually flying out of Corsica, which is
Corsica,
an island about 100 miles off the coast on the coast of Italy. The novel is really, outside of a couple of events, nothing like the real event. I mean, he based it on characters, but what he was writing about was being a person with a moral conscience in a large organization that doesn't necessarily have one,
right?
And how you deal with that,
right?
And it turns out there's an event, a real event that did happen, that I think has a lot to do with why he wrote the novel. He had started flying missions at the end of May of 1944, and by the late part of August, he had flown 40 missions, a mission about every other day. And he later said after the war that he only flew milk runs, but that's not true, because if you look at the war diaries and you read what they say about him, 35 of those 40 missions were what they would call hot. And then in the 6 months after August 23rd, he flew 20 missions, one mission a week, and really only one of them was a hot mission, a mission to sink an Italian cruiser in Spezia Harbor. And that was at a time when the war diarists are writing about the fact that it's increasingly difficult to find an easy mission, let alone fly it. And but Heller did, 19 of them. And he also left at the end of January with only 60 missions to his credit, at a time when it was a pretty hard and fast rule that 70 was what you needed. And the question is, what happened there? Well, there's a mission that they flew on August 23rd that is beat for beat in the novel. They were sent to bomb a small village that had a bridge on it, a bridge that had been built by Caesar's legions, that had no other military value and had no weapons, no nothing. They were to knock it down and turn it into rubble to try and block the road for a German panzer division. It was the kind of mission that they really hated, because you're flying along at 7,000 feet. You can see what's going on down there when you're dropping the bombs. They ended up making the mission, and one airplane, after they had turned on the initial point run to the bomb drop, lifted out of the formation and dropped his bombs in a field. He went back home, back to the base, and he said that he was evading flak, which you can't do once you've turned the initial point. And there wasn't any flak because there weren't any guns there. And nobody said, no, that's not true. His crew didn't say anything. None of the other people in the mission said anything. And after that, there's a whole lot of talk in the War Diary about why they had to fly this mission that hadn't been before. And also about that point, Heller, who was on that mission, stops being so prominent in the War Diary as doing various and sundry things. What happens is that he ends up getting a job working as an actor in a documentary being made for the colonel by a fellow bombardier who was a pre-war documentary filmmaker. And that guy puts in his diary that the job is a piece of baloney for the colonel. And what I think has happened in the novel, the end of chapter 29, they are arguing like crazy that they don't want to fly this mission. The colonel comes in and he says, you know, me and the general go to a lot of effort to get you guys these milk runs where nobody's going to get you. If you don't want them, we can send you to the hot targets. Just let me know. And there's dead silence in the room while these guys are going, do I bomb people I'll never meet and be safe, or do I go someplace where I might get killed? And there's the moral quandary.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. So that's
the beginning of the next chapter.
Yeah.
Yossarian is flying as the lead bombardier. He almost doesn't drop his bombs, which the real lead bombardier almost did. And his friend throws away his bombs. Comes back. There's a whole lot of controversy, and he's taken aside, and they say, you know, stop doing all this. Join us. We'll take care of you. And Yossarian says no. But I think Heller said yes.
Is that right? No.
And Heller, I think, came later to see that as an act of moral cowardice. He's the kind of guy, he had a very strong moral conscience. And that's why he ended up, I think,
right,
writing the book. He's
right,
not going to come back and tell me whether I'm right or not.
I guess not,
but
yes.
But it fits all the facts.
We're talking with Thomas Cleaver. He's the author of the brand new book, by the way. It just came out on the 9th. It's called The Bridge Busters, the True Story of the Catch-22 Bomb Wing. And I presume the stuff you're telling us is all in the book.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And these missions that they flew, as you said, were very decisive in bringing Italy, to its knees.
Yes. And there's another thing. When the novel came out during the Vietnam War, everybody saw it as becoming emblematic of Vietnam. But the interesting thing is, Heller wrote the novel between 1952 and 1959. And I can assure you that in those years, the word Vietnam never got said in America.
Right.
But what happened was, the war in the novel has no higher purpose than what they're doing. It's there. And which is actually what was going on in Italy. By the time Heller got to Italy, it was a thoroughly secondary theater. They invaded Normandy, and the big fight was up in France and Germany.
Right.
And Italy was just literally being fought because it was there. And I have talked to the guys and the survivors, and they said that eventually it kind of got to you that there wasn't a great purpose to what they were doing, other than there was a purpose of stopping the supplies.
Right.
But there wasn't the great grand feeling of we're on the road to victory. That's kind of the same feeling a lot of people I know in Vietnam had. I certainly did. And so what happened was, Heller is writing about Italy, but he's writing about a war that has no purpose. And people said, wait a minute, he's metaphorically talking about Vietnam. How the novel got picked up, as it did. It amazed Heller when it became popular, and when it was seen as somehow being around Vietnam. Because he said many times in his interviews that, you know, when I wrote this, there was no Vietnam.
Yeah, I think a lot of people though see it as a testament about all war. In other words, this could apply to any war that you end up having these moral disconnects.
That can't be said about it.
Right.
I don't know anybody who came back from one who is pro-war.
Do you know if there's anybody from that bomb wing that is still alive?
Oh, yeah. There was about six guys that I talked to, two of whom aren't here with us now. I mean, the youngest one in the group is 91 years old.
Right. Did any of them remember Heller?
One of them did. Sterling Ditchie, who was also a bombardier, he said that they ended up in different bomb squadrons. And once you were in a different squadron, you didn't talk to many people that weren't in your squadron. But when the novel came out and people talked to him about it, he thought about it and he realized that he had gone to navigator training with Heller, back in the States.
All right. Well, listen, Thomas, thanks for being on the show with us. And perhaps we can have you back again around Veterans Day to go over this again. Sounds like a great book. You know, I loved the movie and the Catch-22 book, so I'm going to have to pick up a copy of your book.
Okay.
And do you have a website or something that people can
visit? ThomasMcKelveyKlever.com, one word.
How do you spell your middle name?
McKelvey, and then Cleaver like a meat axe.
All right. Well, you chopped down on this one pretty good, Thomas. So thank you so much for being a part of the show. We really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and once again, the name of that book is brand new, just came out, The Bridge Busters, The True Story of the Catch-22 Bomb Wing.
I watch the Military Channel all the time, particularly in World War II, and it just seems that should be just about forced viewing by the American public to see how cruel people are and what goes wrong. And when you see what these pilots did, what was it? One out of every three never made it back.
Yeah.
I mean, you just sit there and then you see what goes on in the day when these students, a guy called me a name, I need a safe place to go and hide.
Right.
You know, we're doing such an injustice to our public because of the bozos we have sitting up in Washington. So it's great that this guy, again, has another published thing, and Memorial Day's coming up, and I'm sure everybody will be out there honoring the people we should honor.
This sounds like a book, and I haven't seen a copy yet, but I am going to pursue one. Sounds like a book that would make a great gift for somebody, that historian in your family. Once again, it's called The Bridge Busters, The True Story of the Catch-22 Bomb Wing. All right, we'll be right back with more of the American Adversaries Drive Time Primetime Show, and we got another Thursday contest coming up, so we'll lay down the rules for you.
And the sign said, long-haired freaky people need not apply. So I took my hair up under my hat, and I went in to ask him why. He said, you look like a fine, upstanding young man. I think you do. So I took off my hat, I said, imagine that. Could be working for you. Whoa, sign, sign.
Everywhere's a sign. Now, when was this made? Back in the 60s? 70s?
Yeah, originally,
71?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is so appropriate for the upcoming conventions. I'm glad we put it on tonight, Nick. Good job.
It's only appropriate also. It's also appropriate for our contest.
Our contest. Last week, we had a phenomenal reception. I think we had 26 entries, and they were very good, too.
Excellent ones, yeah.
But Chris and me discussed these things, and we're both concerned about the upcoming conventions and everything. And it seems like every time Trump's there, you have all these nuts on the other side of the street with their signs and everything.
Sure.
Well, it's about time that we get our signs together, because we could have Debbie Wasserman visiting us, or, you know, the head of Iran or something like that. He's not invited.
London mayor.
That's right. The London mayor. He may be here. So
well,
what we want to do.
At some point, I'm sure both candidates will be coming to Orlando.
Right.
And so we need to be ready, right?
Yeah, we got to be ready. And we want to make sure that everybody has put their signs together. And we're going to choose the sign that we feel best represents whatever issue, you know what I mean? But we want signs that go right to the heart of the party. And like my sign, I mean, I don't know if I would call it a loving sign, but it gets the point across real well, right? We know that, you know, the United States has a lot of mosques around, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well.
And we know that Trump is not too excited about a certain group of individuals.
Syrian refugees.
Right. And so since the Democratic Party wants open doors, meaning open borders,
right,
and they have no problem with Sharia law or anything like that, because
if you vote
Democratic, you're endorsing Sharia law.
That's right.
So my sign for the big event when they show up will be, stone your daughter, not mine. Ban Sharia. So I'll be out there with all the other people holding their signs to make sure the public understands what the Democratic Party stands for.
Okay, I got one question, regarding the rules. Does this have to be a protest sign, or can it be a positive sign?
It can be either way, but you have to define it. We're not going to guess it, and it could be for either party.
All right.
But now on my sign, too, I will have a donkey on it, and I'll also have, the crescent,
and crescent moon.
So everybody understands when you vote for a Democratic candidate, you are voting for Sharia law.
Okay. All right. Now that's Thursday.
Thursday should be a big turnout.
Get your signs ready.
Sign. Everywhere's a sign.
That's right. Blocking up the scenery, making up our minds. Okay. So get your signs ready for Thursday, and you'll be playing for some groceries. You'll be playing for a $20 gift card to Cafe Positano.
That's great.
Compliments of Jerry and Jana Shepherd of Jerry's MB, Jerry's Mercedes Benz. By the way, summer's coming up. If you plan on going out, taking a vacation and using your car, and it's a Mercedes-Benz, stop on by Jerry's. He'll give you a free hazard safety check so you don't go out on the road with perhaps a percolating problem there somewhere.
I'll tell you, Chris, this is the fact he checks your tires. I mean, do you know how many accidents are caused by blowouts and things like that? And these people just aren't checking their tires or the air in their tires, basic stuff like that.
Yeah, I was guilty of that. I parked the other day a couple of weeks ago on a job site, and I had kind of turned in when I backed in. And so when I got out of the car, my steering wheel, my wheels were turned all the way to the left.
Right.
And I looked at one of my front tires, and I could see the cord.
Oh, nice. Nice. You better get the Jerry's real quick, I'll tell you.
Well, I scooted on over to Costco and got four new ones. But anyway.
Four bad ones. That's great, Chris.
I got a Volvo. I don't drive a Mercedes.
You're not a safety hazard.
Jerry will take care of that Mercedes like nobody else. And don't be like me. Take it over there and let him check that thing out. And you'll also win a $10 gift card to Tijuana Flats, compliments of Rick Brown.
I know that eating contest we had. I mean, for $10, you can probably get 4 or 5 tacos.
Yeah.
Boy, were they delicious.
Yeah, I ran into somebody last night who said that they could have won that contest.
Oh, big talker, no walker. When I hear people say that in anything, be it sports, whatever, big talker, no walker, show up. But you know what, Chris? Do you got his name? Because he's going to get his chance.
He said he's coming up soon. He said he'd be at the next one.
Okay, that's what I want to see. Big talker, no walker.
All right, anyway, the sign contest is Thursday. Now, we also have this ongoing VP contest for Trump. That's going to get you a dinner at Cafe Positano with us. Not a $20 gift card, a dinner.
They might want the $20 gift card.
We'll work it out if they would rather have
no offense, but
but they would have dinner with
Nick's
us.
Nick's back there laughing.
There you go. And B. Brian Blair going to come over and regale us with wrestling stories of him being on the road, literally in the same. Can you imagine being on the road in the same car with Andre the Giant and Dusty Rhodes?
Oh, what
now,
a
that
crew.
Doesn't leave much room. For anybody else. I don't care what size the car is, right?
Because Hacksaw is part of his living now is he's actually a nightclub entertainer being paid extremely well. And he's actually touring through different areas of the United States just doing wrestling stories.
I have to get him back on the show.
Yep.
Anyway, the Trump VP contest is ongoing, obviously, until he announces it. And then we'll know who the winner is if one of our listeners has chosen the right person. So far, 16 people have been chosen.
That's 16 names that are already gone.
16 names that are off the list. But there's a couple of glaring absences from our list. Marco Rubio is not on our list. Nobody has chosen Marco Rubio yet. Now, I know the word has been out there that he wouldn't do it, but Kasich has said the same thing, and he's on our list. Marco Rubio basically came out today, or tweeted, I guess, last night in some late-night tweets, "Don't count me out." That's my phrase. But he basically says, "I'm not saying I wouldn't do it."
Mm-hmm.
And I would pick him because he's young, he's Hispanic, and the ladies love him, and he's from Florida. So, I don't know. I would think that he is at least a bona fide contender, and yet no one has picked him yet.
There must be a reason, though, Chris, that you just don't grasp.
I must be. Also, no one has picked Bobby Jindal. Okay. All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, step right up. Let's go see the elephant without a road.
Welcome back to the show, folks. I don't know about wherever you are, but right here it is coming down. It's raining pretty hard out there, so if you're not on the road, you might want to wait it out a little while if you can. If you have to get out on the road, please allow yourself a little extra time so that you get there safe and sound.
Because nobody used to always bother me when you'd say, well, if it's raining hard, wait it out. But then everybody goes to the bar, then they get smashed, and then they go, I think they're smarter going forward now.
Well, if you're going to do that, then you have to wait that out, too.
Wait it out. Wait until tomorrow morning.
Yeah, all right. In the meantime, you are listening to the American Adversaries Drive Time Primetime Show as we come to you live on FM 105.5 and AM 660, The Answer. That is the chairman of the board, Mike McBath. I am Christopher Hart. Nick LoCicero is on the bridge. 407-774-8255 is still the number. One real quick note on the Shriners Circus tickets. They have all been put in the mail. They were put in the mail Saturday, so if you didn't get them yesterday or today, make sure you check your mailbox tomorrow. If they don't come tomorrow, something has happened, and we'll need to make other arrangements. So you can call the show tomorrow night and let us know. Hopefully you all got them and you're all set to go. All right. Speaking of set to go, let's get back to business. I'm going to go over these poll numbers again real quick for some of you listeners who didn't catch them in the first hour of the show. You know, for months and months, we heard that one reason why we shouldn't be supporting Donald Trump is that he couldn't beat Hillary Clinton, that she would whip him and in a landslide. Why, she already has 200 and some odd electors even before we start, because there are so many blue states. You got California, you got New York, you got New Jersey, you got Oregon.
Pennsylvania.
Name it, all right? And it's already in the Democrat column. Well, maybe not quite so. All right. There's some new national polls out. There's a SurveyMonkey national poll. This is done in conjunction with NBC. And all of the polls that I'm going to tell you are the same thing is happening. The gap is closing.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump is closing in on Hillary. In this SurveyMonkey poll, it's now basically a statistical dead heat because it's in the margin of error, 48-45, Clinton over Trump. However, when you look at the independents, it is 44-36 Trump. And
that's such a good sign.
And he has shown positive movement amongst women. Hillary still shows a 15 percentage point advantage, but last week it was 19. When it comes to approval rating, Trump and Hillary basically are the same. Her approval rating is 40, his is 37 in the SurveyMonkey poll. Also, there's a couple other polls out. A local polling group, Gravis Marketing, shows this national poll, 48-46, Clinton over Trump. Once again, pretty much within margin of error, and it is within the margin of error. And it has closed from prior polling. And then there's this McLaughlin group poll. And this is a national poll. They did do some state polling as well, but I'll focus on the national numbers. They show it 46-42 Clinton. Once again, pretty close to the margin of error. Not quite in it this time, but nonetheless, it is closed. The gap has closed. And how about these categories for you? Trump gets 13% of the black vote.
Yeah, we talked about that. I mean, he's moving up the ladder, and I think as they get more exposed to him and his principles and the way he can deliver a message, he's going to continue to raise that number.
And he's going to have some high-profile black folks out endorsing him. One black man who would probably endorse him because they used to be good friends, who isn't around anymore, was Michael Jackson. The Hispanics, and by the way, Romney got 9% of the black vote. This 13%, that's what George, that was up around where George W.
Right.
And now, didn't he get elected to something?
Yeah.
All right. And then there was the Hispanic vote. Romney got about 27%. Trump is getting about 27%.
Chris, but you got to remember.
And that's after all those nasty things he said.
You have to remember Romney quoting that woman the other day on TV. Oh, he's just so yesterday. I had to laugh with that lady when she said that.
And then Catholics amongst Catholics. This is nationwide now. Trump leads Clinton 47-42. And in all of the numbers, you have the same thing happening. Positive movement for Trump, negative or no movement for Hillary. Now that is not a good thing for Hillary.
Look at that Catholic situation, 47-42. Again, as they get closer and closer to the real election, I guarantee you they're going to dig in because look what Hillary stands for. How can you be a good Catholic and vote for Hillary?
Well, because there are a lot of, there's like the Joe Bidens out there, the Nancy Pelosi.
So you believe in Sharia law?
Well,
you believe in abortion?
Well, all I'm saying is probably, this is probably a fairly accurate representation that there are probably about 40% of Catholics out there who are liberals. They're just liberals. They call
themselves. I'm surprised they're Catholics.
They call themselves Catholics.
Yeah, I'm going to call
myself. But they don't really, abide by the church doctrine.
A Kardashian Catholic.
Right. They like it when the Pope comes out with liberal causes. That's when they really feel strong Catholic roots. Right. I believe, once again, that's 89%. So there's 11% of the Catholics out there evidently who haven't decided yet. They're not going to go for Hillary.
No. This is all good news for Trump.
All good news.
All good news.
All good news
for
exciting.
Trump. That's
exciting. And here's more good news for Trump because it's bad news for us. And that's the way it works in politics. History is on Trump's side. Once again, because people are perceiving him as someone who can actually solve problems, gets problems solved. Not necessarily that he'll solve them, but that he can get them solved. And by the way, you mentioned something a while ago when we were talking about how now another woman who has come out today who was quoted in this New York Times article over the weekend has said, oh, no, they got it all wrong. Trump was a great guy, had no problem with him whatsoever. I was listening to another woman who was not in the article, but she was on Fox last night and was talking about what it was like to actually. These are women who dated him who were in the article and some who had worked for him. But this woman had worked for him as well and said the main thing with Trump was, could you do the job? Could you get the job done?
Right.
What the man was most interested in his employees were people who could get results. What have we been telling you on this show for the past now 10 months is that this is a guy who will put the people in the right positions, give them the task, and then demand results. Because that's the way he does. You cannot be in his position if you do business any other way, pretty much.
The other thing, Chris, with the thousands and thousands of people on his payroll, I'm just absolutely pleasantly amazed by so few complaints. I don't know how many America could run for a political office with all the employees that he has. And with all the nuts that there are out there, there's not more complaints about this guy, which tells me. They admire the guy. The guy is fair. The guy works with integrity. Again, we reflect on how his family acts, how what they've done. I just have trouble finding out that this guy, he's mentally ill. He's narcissistic. He's this. You know what? I think all the commentators might be mentally ill. Maybe not Trump. So,
by the way, now that you mention that, we'll get to some market news and other things here in a second. But there's a guy who is a psychologist who has written a book, and I believe it's called The Mind of Trump. It has just come out, and he was parading around doing some book reviews, the book tour this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that there are three qualities about Trump that he noticed. And by the way, he did not interview Trump, did not do any direct contact with Trump.
Okay.
This was all from things he saw on television, or heard on radio, or read about or by
remember,
Trump.
He's acting too, though. So when in determining his personality, you got to throw in the actor part because, you know, what do you say based on the circumstances
right.
and what image do you want to put forth? So I don't know.
Well, anyway, he said that Trump is extra extroverted. In other words, more so than most presidents have sort of an introverted streak. Obama's like that. When he's not, it's 9 to 5.
When he's not lying, he's an introvert.
Well, at the end of the day, about 5 o'clock, about an hour ago, he goes up into the personal quarters, the family quarters of the White House, and he stays there. And he's oftentimes up there alone.
He's probably smoking a joint.
Who knows? I'll just say what he's doing.
I think I get the reason why he's up there. Like, no one else is allowed up there. I get it.
He's smoking down on a doobie and watching Star Trek.
I know.
Trump is extra extroverted. He says also that he is disagreeable and tends to be non-empathetic. And yet, then he goes on to say that he doesn't believe that Trump holds grudges. And I believe this to be true, too.
I believe it. Again, this sounds funny. By the names he calls people, he's used to being in business battle. And, you know, when people say this and that, it's just like playing on a sports field. You may call a guy in front of you every name of the book. The minute the game
is
ends,
over.
He's your best friend and you're down the street drinking at the bar.
Yeah.
In its own way, this is what really surrounds politics. And this is what the media doesn't get.
Yeah.
He's not nasty to women. He's just competing against the women who enter the field of combat.
Indeed. Indeed. And this thing about not holding grudges, it also is very much, as I like to say, like professional wrestling. Because in professional wrestling, out in the ring, they're mortal enemies, right? But when they go behind the curtain,
buddies.
They're buddies.
Right.
And they know that they need each other for the other to be who they are.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, good politicians don't hold grudges. They may get even later on or something like that, but they don't necessarily hold a grudge.
But
you can't.
Everybody dislike you.
Exactly. And you will eat yourself up inside.
Right.
And so, anyway, let's go to Al, see what he thinks about Donald Trump. Al, thank you for calling tonight.
Yes, sir. Chris, you know what's fixed?
What's that?
Bird dropping. And the media and all them people against Trump, they don't have anything on Trump. So all this dust that they're throwing at him, he just flicking it off his jacket like it's nothing.
You're right.
You know, so
Al is right on
that. Harder.
What's that?
They're going to have to come harder.
Well, I don't know that they're going to be able to.
Where are they going to get the ammunition?
Yeah, that this is, I mean, they don't have the ammunition that the Republicans have on Hillary. Let's put it that way. And so this is a minefield that Trump is Hillary's worst nightmare, believe me, because of what you just said, Al. They throw all this stuff at him, and he just flicks it away like a mosquito buzzing around his ear or something like that. And you're absolutely right. It is not sticking. And I don't know that going after him harder is going to go make it work any better. But anyway, go Bernie. Go Bernie, Al. Thanks for being out there. Appreciate it.
You know, Chris.
But he's right. He's absolutely right.
What he said, and we've seen so much bounce off of him, I don't know if anything can stick to him because the public is so used to it bouncing off, they're going to expect it to bounce off.
Well, and also, unless they come up with something a whole lot better than this, when you compare him to the Clintons, and politics is all about comparison shopping. It's a no-brainer. You know, it's funny to me that you got all these people who were not all, you know, never Trumpers to begin with, now having to come to terms with the fact that not only is he winning the Republican primary, but it looks like he has a more than excellent chance of winning the presidency. They are lost. They are flummoxed. But you folks aren't, because you've been listening to the American adversaries.
That's for sure.
Like McBath said last week, we know talent when we see it or when we hear it, like Al. We'll be right back with more of the show. Give me in. Never mind.
No, this is Woodstock music. Nick, is this okay?
Well, yeah.
Going down to Keister's Farm.
Not this album. You remember the fish cheer? Never mind.
It's probably what Obama listens to while he's up in the White House.
Yeah. Now, he listens to White Rabbit, believe me.
Okay. Welcome back to the show, folks. 407-774-8255 is the number. We got a couple of phone callers, so let's go to the phone lines. Paul is up first. Paul, thank you for calling tonight.
Hi, you're quite welcome. How y'all doing?
Excellent. Hey, Paul. How about you?
Well, I'm fair to partly cloudy. I'm trying to avoid these rain clouds that are coming and going.
Dancing down the highway, right, Paul?
Be careful out there.
You guys are somewhere north of College Park, right? You're in Maitland or something like that?
We're actually in Altamont Springs, just west of 434 and 436.
Well, I'm looking at the clouds, and they're coming your way from down here. So.
Yeah, well, we just got one little driving rain, so we'll be looking for the next one.
I guess so. I really enjoy your show, of course.
Thank you.
But I've been thinking about this vice presidential pick for Mr. Trump.
Oh, good. This is really good.
You got an entry for us?
Y'all, I have something, and if I'm correct, now, most people will say, no, that ain't going to happen, but I am correct. It will have such staggering, proportional consequences for your show, number one.
Whoa.
It will make you a national radio hit overnight. You'll have all the audience, all the advertisers that you could ever hope for.
All right.
Okay, Paul, give it to us.
You got our interest peaked. We're on the edge of our seat.
I think, dare I say it, I think he's going to pick Bigfoot.
Let's see, Bigfoot. That Mike's got big feet. You talking about Ronald McDonald?
you know who I'm talking about. That creature in the woods somewhere.
Yeah, oh, yeah, we know Bigfoot. Yep.
Bigfoot.
Yep, the northern woods. Sasquatch. Yep.
I thought he was the Bigfoot.
Yep.
All right.
Well, that's different. We would have never guessed that. That's for sure.
I'll put you on the list as Bigfoot.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Paul. We appreciate you being out there.
What do you think Paul's been drinking? Bigfoot? Wow.
All right, let's go to, Shaq O'Neal has some pretty big feet.
Yeah.
Let's go to Jason up next. Jason, thank you for calling tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show.
Sure.
I just wanted to comment on Trump and the way you guys talk about the way things don't stick to him.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of it has to do with he sticks up for himself and he doesn't take flack for it. And I think that a lot of, somebody like George W. Bush, I appreciate the man and I think he did a great job in many ways. He didn't stick up for himself when the media attacked him. And I think there's something to that when you play it straight and just tell it like it is. And if somebody's attacking you, you come back at them. And I think that people have respect for that on both sides of the aisle, if you're moderate, liberal or whatnot. And certainly those who are consider themselves moderate, I think, or just, not apolitical, are going to respect that. And I think that may have a lot of that groundswell that you guys talk about that's
going
to carry over.
I think you're absolutely right. And I'll take it even a little bit further than that. When George W. Bush didn't defend himself, he also wasn't defending us. And what I mean when I say us, I mean conservatives.
Conservatives, yeah.
Exactly. He let us hang out there because all of those criticisms were directed at us as well as at him. And he didn't understand that defending himself also meant defending us. So when people see Trump defend himself like that, they intrinsically know, well, he's going to stand up for me too. And once again, because we haven't had that for a long time since Reagan, it's something that people are starved for. So I think you're absolutely right. I would just take it a little bit further and say people have been wanting somebody to defend conservatism, and if it's Donald Trump, then it's Donald Trump.
Because I was thinking,
because nobody else has done it.
We could coin a name. He Trumpedos them. Because really what Jason says, I mean, he fires back all the time, and I love it too. I mean, stand up. George Bush sat down. Romney faded into the sunset? Not Trump. I'll fight you all the way if I'm right.
Excellent point.
I love it.
Excellent point, Jason.
Yep, sticking to your principles and sticking to, you know, sticking up for yourself. I think there's something to that, no question. And you said taking another step is certainly right on what you said, I believe.
All right. Well, you inspired my thought. I appreciate it.
There you go.
All right. Thank you so much, Jason. We appreciate you being out there. All right. And,
I think people just love it. I mean, just I like a tough guy that stands there, and we've been wanting this. We're so tired of the Congress being pushed around like a bunch of milquetoast. This is great.
And we see Clinton defend himself. We see Trump.
I know.
You got to admire it that they don't, you know, they stand up there and they're you know, they're unabashed about defending themselves and defending their point of view. And George W. Bush thought it was beneath the dignity of the White House.
No, well, I don't think he had a quick enough intellectual response to fire back at him.
You got to go where the criticisms are.
Yep.
You can't let them hang out there like that. He'll always be known as a liar because the critics, you know, they labeled him that, just like Trump has labeled these other candidates, right? You had Lying Ted, you had Little Marco, you got Crooked Hillary, you got Crazy Bernie, you got Goofy Lizzie. So, you know, those tags hang on you.
Yeah, and I like Trumpitos. Trumpitos everybody did. So this
all
is
right.
good. We're going in the right direction.
Going in the right direction, but we got to go to a break. It's a hard one. Now you'll have to listen to us on your smart device or on the web because the Rays are upcoming next. But we hope you'll be with us on the other side. We'll be right back.
Hey, y'all. This is heavyweight professional wrestler Sam Houston. You know, I know true champions in the political professional wrestling ring. The American Adversaries on AM 660. The Answer. These guys pile drive liberal baloney.
All right. Welcome back to the show, folks. That's right. You got us here until 7 o'clock. Then Larry Elder comes in. I sure do like listening to Larry Elder. He's great.
He's very level-headed.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? In other words, some of these people like Michael Medved, they tip too far one direction.
Mm-mm.
He seems to be balancing very well on the surface. So.
Yeah, indeed, indeed, indeed. Real quick, I want to ask you something because, you know, the city is still seems to be enamored with the idea of bringing the NFL Pro Bowl here. They have now started slinging around big numbers, like $40 million in revenue here, if the Pro Bowl sells out.
Right. Now, my feeling, Chris,
I wanted to get your thoughts on this,
is, you know, having probably more knowledge about the players' part than anybody in this city, mayor, anybody, is that the players are really getting tired of the Pro Bowl. And it's absolutely shown by the number that dropped out. 47 players who were chosen to play in it said, I don't want to play.
This year's Pro Bowl.
They didn't show up.
This year's Pro Bowl. Yeah.
And then when you saw the Pro Bowl, none of the players were going, I call, maximum speed. They literally would not even tackle somebody. They grab them by the hips. Now, do you actually think you're going to sell 65,000 tickets to see a touch football game? I'm not sure. And my concern is, because the NFL, you know how greedy they are, is they just take the money of the city. They don't care. But I want the city to just get me the answer. How profitable has this been over the last 3 years? Tell us.
The Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
Has the Pro Bowl ever sold out?
I think the most is 50,000, I think.
So it was not?
No. And it's a case. My other concern is, remember, we have three bowl games here right in a row.
Right.
You know, before this Pro Bowl.
College bowl games.
And I call it ticket tiredness. There's a point that the general public goes, you know what? I'm out of my money. I'm not paying another $150 to see what aren't the all-pros that are substitutes for the all-pros in a game which they're really not whacking each other. You know, so I'm...
And I can't see where they're going to sell the place out.
No, I don't.
Because...
It's not like Penn State's playing Florida.
Well, I was going to say, they're
They don't
not,
have a constituency.
Who is going to come from across the country...
To see Johnny Brown, the defensive safety for the Seattle Seahawks.
Right. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
Right.
So... People will not come from out of town to see the Pro Bowl.
I believe
the Pro Bowl always really was a television event. Right. It's not really a game that people are going to go see because they know it's not. It's like you say, it's more touch football than anything else.
You remember the college all-star game in the old days, back in the early 70s and late 60s. You took the winningest NFL team, you know, the number one NFL team, and they would play the college all-stars.
That's right.
What happened to the game? Bye-bye. Just disappeared. And my feeling now is because the money, the average NFL player makes $3 million. Now, the other thing in the Pro Bowl, this is an expensive game. The player on the winning team gets $60,000. The player on the losing team gets $20,000. And there's something like 95 plus players on both teams added up.
Right.
So the reality of it is, do they ever talk about a potential loss? And if you think it's going to be so wonderful, why do you need to use the taxpayers' money?
Right.
That's what has me confused. Why don't you just have your own people that are part of the Citrus Bowl? You put up your money and you take the rewards. Well,
right.
I'm not sure we want to do this.
Right, right.
I got a suspicion that maybe we want to party with the NFL elite and not worry about what the results of the Pro Bowl are.
That's my
concern.
That's my feeling,
yeah,
too.
I mean, yeah. I'm over this where taxpayer money is spent. I mean, the whole public should be tired of this. So if they can prove that they did well in the last few years, no complaints. But I got a suspicion no one talks about it.
Yeah.
So there's something amiss.
And to think that that will be a sellout. We're the ones getting sold out, right?
Yeah. It is a sellout. You got sold out, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, they're sitting at the party at the Super Bowl because they're foolish enough to put on a Pro Bowl to fill the pockets of the NFL.
Well, you know, I got an idea how we can take care of this. We can nip this thing right here in the bud. All we got to do is pass a law which says that you can only use the bathroom that you are biologically capable of using, right?
I agree. And you know what? When you're drinking a lot of beer,
the NFL will say, well, we're not going to bring any Pro Bowls out there.
And can you imagine, too, when they're drinking a lot of beer, they're going to be dashing to wherever they got to go. So that's a good point. We could end it real quickly.
Because, you know, the NFL said they're not going to go to Georgia, or they wouldn't go to Georgia, but I guess Governor Deal vetoed the bill.
Yeah.
And they're not going to go to South Carolina, not going to go to Mississippi, the NBA, the NFL. So we'll just, all right, we'll one-up Buddy Dyer and Teresa Jacobs up there,
yeah,
right? And we'll get the state legislature to pass a law like in North Carolina. That'll take care of this nonsense.
What's below is where you go,
right?
That could be our motto and put it across the scoreboard. You know, for you transgenders, if you're confused,
right.
What's below is where you go.
And what I want to know is while they were spending that, what was it, $500 million, wasn't it about – No, I forget. It was $200 or $300 or $400 million that they spent on refurbishing, basically rebuilding the stadium.
They spent over. It was $400 million.
I demand to know why our local government didn't install transgendered bathrooms in that doggone place down there.
Oh, they should have had foresight to that.
I don't know.
Democratic,
now they've messed everything all up, and it may cost us the Pro Bowl.
Oh, no. I don't think we'll sleep at night if that happens, Chris.
Oh, let's see what Sherry thinks. Sherry, thanks for calling tonight.
Good evening, guys. How are you?
Hey, Sherry.
Good, good. You getting wet out there?
Oh, yeah. Listen, a little while ago, you were getting ready to talk about what the contest was going to be on Thursday.
Yeah, sure.
So I said, okay, it just has stopped raining, and I said, I'm going to run out and get some hay. I'm going to run back in. But you must have had a short break.
All right, so.
Because I came in and I missed it.
Wait, she said something that caught my ears. You were going to run out and get some hay?
Yeah.
What for?
My horse.
Her horse. No, you know, I was at a horse event this weekend.
About you losing your horse.
Oh yeah, that's what I thought.
I'm so sorry.
She's got one.
Oh yeah, I did. I mean, does that rip you up though? My daughter and my wife were so upset.
I'm sorry for your daughter, especially.
Oh, you know, and you know how they bury him. Oh my God.
Now Sherry's got yours was 24. Hers is. You said your horse is 22.
22, yeah.
And she's had this horse ever since it was a little.
Since it was a little
colt or
foal.
I have another one, Sherry, that's 30. And
really,
This one had been a great performer, but, you know, we're at the end of the road, as you know.
Yeah. And then, you know, Trigger lived to 32.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah. And, then he had him stuffed.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and then I got a 10-year-old, and then my...
You have a burro, too, don't you?
Oh, yeah, I got, yeah, like a half a donkey, whatever, you know, one of those miniatures. That is the cutest thing you ever saw. I mean, he is
We're
so...
going to have to put that picture of that animal and your wife on our website.
Yeah.
It is the cutest thing.
He'll put his face right up against you and rub you.
Big smile on his face.
Smiles. Yeah. You know,
he's eating hornets or something like that.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, my horse is my watchdog.
Oh, really? You know, those burros.
Nobody's going to come into my backyard.
No doubt.
He runs free.
Oh, he does. Okay.
And so anybody that comes in there, man, she can hear them coming, and she goes running up to them, scares them to hell.
As you know, Sherry, those burros, when they bay, oh, my God, the noise they make is unbelievable. You can hear them from half a mile away.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people, I don't think, realize what they can do. You know?
Yeah, that's for real. Mm. Well, okay, so the contest rules are come up with a sign. It can either be a protest sign or a pro-candidate sign that you would maybe carry at, say, if Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump or somebody else comes to town.
Susie Wasserman stops by. So, we want to be prepared. So yeah. We're so putting together our signs.
Mike's sign is going to – what's your sign going to say again?
Mine is going to have the picture of a donkey on it and a crescent
moon.
And it's going to say, "Stone your daughter, not mine. Ban Sharia." Now, I think
that's great,
appropriate,
man.
Don't you? I mean, if you're a Democrat and you support Sharia law, which you are endorsing by voting for Hillary, then, you know, make sure it's your daughter, not mine.
Especially with her girlfriend, Uma.
Oh, I know. Oh. Oh. Oh.
You know, I think that's the only reason she married Wiener is to cover her...
Oh, I think that was just to get into the...
Cover herself.
Yeah.
Give her some cover. That's right. I think you're right. Because she spends, by the way, a lot more time with Hillary than she does with Tony.
I wonder why.
No, not Tony. What did he call himself there? What was it? Carlos. Carlos Danger.
Danger.
Oh, my God. That's disgusting.
If you were married to somebody that called himself Carlos Danger, you wouldn't stay home much either.
No, I don't think so either. I'd be in another country.
She wasn't even married that time. She ended up getting married.
I know. Yeah. Hillary,
marriage of convenience.
Hillary and Bill helped her work through her marital problems.
Oh, I can imagine.
I'm serious.
Oh, please. Yeah. Bill probably took her out for a date. You know
what I mean? He's not her type. She's too old for him.
Nice.
They're pathetic, both of them. All four of them.
They are pathetic. But you know what? Trump's going to give them what they deserve to
get. I hope so.
He is. He is going to humiliate them like they have never experienced before. They don't know what they're in. They know that they are in for something. They just don't know what.
Press conference. he needs to go out and get every woman that Bill assaulted, raped, or whatever, and put them up on the stage behind him.
I think that's coming.
Before it's over, I believe it's coming.
I believe that is coming.
Without a doubt.
That is coming. I do believe it is. I believe he'll also have people up on stage like these women that were quoted in this New York Times mm-hmm. article. And this is a different animal. This guy is a different animal. It's like our Jason called a while ago and said, you know, Trump, he doesn't take this stuff. You know, he stands up and he fights back, and he fights back tooth and nail. And these people have never – they've always had, you know, the Republicans who are fairly easily intimidated.
Uh-huh.
Not Donald Trump. You don't intimidate this guy.
Well, he was also right when he said that Donald doesn't hold a grudge.
Yeah, that was a
– unlike somebody else that just lost.
Yeah, you're right. That was a psychologist, actually, that wrote a book about him. But he extrapolated that, but I think it's actually correct. And as Mike said, in business, you know, after the deal is done,
you get back together and you're good buddies. And names are going to be called, people are going to be insulted, and the reality is that's what I don't think these media geeks understand. That you know, Don Trump's style is somewhat prevalent in business.
Yeah, but I think Reagan was like that. I don't think Reagan didn't hold grudges.
No.
political grudges.
No.
You know, he it just wasn't in his demeanor. He just didn't have it in him to do that. Some politicians do.
I think a lot of these women that the media tries to portray that women in America hate Trump.
No.
That's, I know.
They say it once or twice, and they keep repeating it over and over, and everybody believes that this is the truth, and it's not.
No, it's not, and the polls are going to bear it out even more. And you know, this is Trump is a different animal, and all the old rules that these talking heads have been working by, they don't apply anymore to him. And he understands politics in the way that the liberals understand politics, and that it is more emotion than it is intellect.
Well, you know, Amapora.
Amarosa. Amapola. Amapola.
Amapola.
Yeah.
Amapola, yeah.
You know, and they were sitting there talking about all the Spanish people hate him. Look what she's saying.
Oh, yeah. And as a matter of fact, I don't know if you heard it, but a McLaughlin poll today, 27% of Hispanics support Donald Trump.
Yeah, I heard you say that.
That's
earlier.
The same percentage that supported Romney. And I guarantee you that's going to go up. It's going to go up. When the election happens, I bet he'll get between 30% and 35%. And that will be enough to keep him from losing because of Hispanics.
I wonder how many legal immigrants we have here in the last, 8 or 9 years, because they're all going to vote for Trump.
That's
everyone
a good
I run into.
Well, the legals are. It's the illegals that aren't. But, you know, it's the liberals that are giving the illegals the right to vote, especially in California.
Yeah, but
their driver's license.
Yeah, I understand. But you know, California is one of the states that the Democrats are probably still going to win no matter what. So it kind of doesn't matter in California. It more or less doesn't matter what they do.
They need to succeed from the United States. California.
Yeah, this election is going to be won or lost in the Rust Belt and in Florida.
Well, let me just say one more thing. I heard the other day, and I heard it again today, and I had heard it a long time ago, but I kind of forgot about it. It's the 12th Amendment.
Yep.
And what they're wanting to do is they want to run a third party against Trump and Hillary, so neither one of them can get the 270 electoral votes.
Right.
That way it gets thrown into the House of Representatives.
Right.
And then each state has one vote, and they can bring in Bush, the former governor of Texas, whoever they want, and then just bypass.
Yeah, here's the monkey wrench in their plan, though, that perhaps they haven't thought of this. It won't be this Congress, this House of Representatives, that elects the next president. It will be the new Congress, the new House of Representatives.
Oh, is that what it is?
Correct. And if they do something like that, that new House of Representatives might have Nancy Pelosi as the leader. But I don't think that they'll do that. All this gum flapping about a third-party candidate is going to go absolutely nowhere. And this is going to be between Trump and Hillary. Unless something happens to Hillary, this is going to be between Trump and Hillary and nobody else.
Well, Biden will jump in.
If something happens to Hillary, I think so. You're right. But right now, the Libertarian candidate is polling about 10%. But I believe that'll dwindle down as well to what they normally get, which is down around less than 5%. This is going to be between Trump and Hillary, and it's going to be ugly for a while, but I think it's going to be over before Election Day. I really do. I think it's going to be obvious to everybody before Election Day that Donald Trump's going to be the next president. So
hopefully so.
All right. Well, you try to take care out there with the storm and everything.
I will. It slowed down a little bit here now, but I'm just going to hang on and listen.
All right. Get your sign. Get your sign
get
ready
that
for Thursday.
Hay taken care of.
That's
for that
right.
Little horse.
All right. Okay. Thanks, Sherry. All right. Stick around. We'll be right back with one more segment of today's show. Okay, welcome back to the show, folks. Thank you so very much for being out there. If you're out there listening right now, it means that you are listening on your smart device because you have downloaded the free app, or you're listening on AM660theanswer.com, Or you went to our website, American Adversaries, and right there on the homepage, you hit that Listen Live button, which you can do 24/7, and you'll get what is streaming on AM 660. So thank you so very, very much. You are our most dedicated listeners, and we really do appreciate you. Even Sherry goes out of her way to listen to us. She'll call up, and because she doesn't have a computer, she'll call the line here, and Nick will put her on hold so she can hear us talking during the show here. So we really appreciate you folks. You try hard to hear us, and we really do appreciate that.
I think
that.
We got an entry coming in, too. She called up about the contest.
Yeah, she pulled that microphone a little closer.
Yeah, I think she's fired up. We haven't heard her for a couple contests lately, so she must be looking for maybe a Positano type deal.
Yeah, that's right. Of course, that's coming up this Thursday.
That's right.
In the meantime, stock market took a big hit today. What's going on?
Yeah, the market was down about 183 points. I think one thing that's interesting about the stock market today versus a while back is, do you know that 52% of Americans own stock today, but in 2008, 65% owned stock?
Now,
the question here is twofold. One, if they all start to return back and run up to that 60, then you're going to have a big move in the market. But the other side of it is because the economy has been so bad and because they got burnt so bad in 08 that, I'm not sure they're ever coming back or not for more years. Now, I think a big plus, which, we can discuss even tomorrow, is the election of Trump. My gut feeling is, it's the old story, in May, go away. In other words, I don't think there'll be much action in May, June, July, August.
What Mike is saying is, if you're an active trader, the old saying is sell in May and go away for the summer, come back in the fall to reinvest your money.
Right. But my thoughts for that is, if it becomes obvious Trump's going to be elected, I think he could see a positive stock market because associated with that would be lower tax, on capital gains. I think he would definitely work on that.
Yeah, but there is this historical trend that shows that when the market is
he's not historical.
Well, that's true, because the trend shows that when the market goes up into an election, the Democrats win. When the market goes down into an election, the Republicans win.
But everything's off with our friend Mr. Trump.
And, indeed it is.
I think the other aspect, too, here, oil crossed over, just about hit 49 today, so we're just about at 50.
Rebounding.
And that's a real surprise.
One reason why is because the oil boom that was going on here in this country has been cut off at the knees.
Right, our production has slowed down.
A lot of the companies that were producing oil and natural gas are right now in Chapter 11 bankruptcy.
And you got Venezuela, who used to ship a lot more to us. You have a lot of these problems around the world, which will always be prevalent. So, I think oil can go back down again, not to where it was, but I think right now you're probably at a balanced price for a while.
We'll see how that goes. But, we were talking about this. Oil is boom and bust, and you buy when it's bad, or when it's good, it's bad. When it's bad,
then
it's good.
Right. We've seen that with Apple.
Yeah, and I talked about that stock, Chesapeake Energy. Remember me talking about that?
It
got down as low as about $1.70 a share.
Right.
It went back up to about $6. Right now, it's about $4.50.
Mm-hmm.
So you get in at around $2.50, you've made good money.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and particularly when you buy stocks that are under $5, a lot of times there's certain rules for pension plans and all that.
This is purely speculation,
a reasonable play if you have the right leadership in the company and you don't think they're just so undercapitalized they're going to turn on debt.
Right.
And I do believe in that old theory because I like utility stocks. But all I do is I just wait till there's a disaster and then I'll go buy them. I'm not interested in them now. They're all near the highs.
Right.
They still pay. Most of them pay 4%, but sounds good, but it's still going to
be bad. You're waiting for a catalyst.
I need something to drive them down, and then I'll be there to play.
Exactly. Did you hear what Mike just said? He waits until something drives the price down.
Right. There's no
hurry. A lot of people think that they buy stocks that are always only the ones that are going up.
No, not particularly if you're a dividend buyer, because what you buy for
you want the
is
higher
dividends.
Yield.
And what I hate to see today on when you open up the TV and there they are talking about, buy the dividend stocks. Well, guess what? They're at all-time highs right now, many of them. So the reality of it is you'll get a correction, so you'll be able to buy them cheaper with a better yield. So it's a game of patience, and then if you miss it, you miss it. But just don't put yourself that far out on the limb.
Yeah, I found that when I invested – that there are two virtues that will do you well: patience and persistence.
Right.
Patience and persistence.
And you can always put stop orders under the market to buy.
Right.
So in other words, I'm just using an example.
What Mike's talking about is limiting
limit
your
orders.
Yeah.
And so in other words, if you know, I'm using like Duke Energy. Let's say it's at $80 today. You know, if Duke gets to 65, I'm interested. So, you know, there's a lot of things you can do. But, I mean, just never be aggressive and get caught up with the TV mantra.
You know,
that's
go.
A real problem.
Yeah, don't watch TV. Listen to the American
Adversaries. That's exactly right. And you'll be on top of the world politically and financially.
There you go. All right.
Maybe.
Okay, that's going to wrap it up for tonight. We will be back tomorrow night. Don't forget our Thursday contest. What's your sign going to say, right? We want signs everywhere.
That's
a sign.
Right.
That's right. So get those contest entries ready. And if you have a VP pick you think Trump should pick, let us know that too. You might win there as well. Night, everybody.
FM 105.5 and AM 660. The Answer. WORL, Altamont Springs, Orlando. The official radio station of